Other than that, what's new for you at Christmas? Where's your hope this Christmas? What will make us joyful this Christmas? Right. We look at the world, there's war in various parts of the world. There are concerns about the environment, immigration, the economy. There are divisions within the church. And of course, there's always tension and division and deadlock in our politics. So what's new this Christmas? It's so easy and so tempting to run after a political messiah, whether Democrat, Republican, Independent, a senator, a Supreme Court justice, etc., etc. Because that's immediate, and at least maybe a tiny little bit under our control. Have you been tempted to politicize the Messiah lately? Does your thought process ever go, well, I know Jesus is the Savior, but if this or that person gets elected, the world's going to end. When you hear our first reading from Isaiah the prophet, do you connect it to our politics, or does it lift you above our politics? The yoke that burdened them, the pole on their shoulder, and the rod of their taskmaster, you have smashed. Every boot that tramped in battle, every cloak rolled in blood, will be burned as fuel for flames. Yes. Which politician, which judge, which political party can deliver that to any of us? And Isaiah, right? Isaiah was a counselor to the king of Judah. He's got a wholly different vision. He goes on to talk about, if you continue on in Isaiah there, he goes on to talk about not the advent of a political messiah, but the birth of a child who has divine titles. Not just counselor, but wonder counselor. Not just hero, but God hero. Not just father, but father forever. Not just bringer of peace, but prince of peace. There has never been, nor will there ever be, a politician, judge, prince, or king who can fix our society, our economy, or our world. We need to have leaders. And we should do our best to elect good ones. But please, don't ever imbue anyone other than Jesus Christ with messianic authority. There's only one Savior, and we celebrate his birth tonight. But what makes tonight not just history, but magnificent mystery, is the fact that with every baptism, Christ is born again into a new Christian, a new disciple. Christmas didn't just happen 2,023 years ago. The Wonder Counselor, the God Hero, the Father Forever, the Prince of Peace is renewed every day in you and me. The Wonder Counselor lives in you. The God Hero lives in you. The Prince of Peace lives in you. We don't need to be dependent on politicians or judges or generals, because there's only one Savior. And he wasn't just born a long time ago. He's born today. And he's my Savior today. And your Savior today. And every day. Of course, the world's a mess. It's a fallen world. Of course I sin. I'm a sinner. But this fallen world and this sinner has a Savior. We sinners have a Savior. It's interesting how in the gospel, Luke goes out of his way to situate the story of Jesus' birth within the context of political and civil powers of the day, naming Caesar Augustus as the emperor and Quirinius as the governor. $10 if you can pronounce that name and other ones correctly or rightly, however they are supposed to be, right? Augustus even gave himself the title of Savior. Soter Mundi, Savior of the world, was a title that people called Caesar. But Luke isn't telling us that these worldly powers give meaning to Jesus' birth. He's contrasting the worldly powers who claim to be Savior. Caesar decreed that the whole world should be enrolled. Contrast that with this little baby with no worldly power, but who is the true and only Savior this world will ever know. Let me rephrase that. He's the true and only Savior you and I will ever know. Our second reading tonight from St. Paul's letter to Titus is absolutely beautiful. The grace of God has appeared, saving all, and training us to reject godless ways and worldly desires, to live temperately, justly, and devoutly in this age. How many worldly desires continue to ensnare me? Am I a son or a daughter of this age? Or am I a son and daughter of our Father forever? Where's the true center of your existence? What identity do you live from the most? Sometimes it's just good to stop for a moment to ponder what's going on. You and I are way past our bedtime, tired, miles from home, and surrounded with people who are here because we all love Jesus and want to pray in the middle of the night. Isn't that beautiful? Look around. These people are here because they love Jesus and want to pray in the middle of the night. How cool is that? And you know, some of the beautiful things about coming to midnight mass include the following. We are tired. We should be in bed. But being tired puts our guard down. And when we come to prayer and mass with our guard down, the Lord is freer to act. He's going to catch us. We want to be caught by the Lord. Secondly, at this hour of night, the world tends to be more still. There are fewer distractions. So it's possible we can hear the Lord's voice maybe a little more clearly. Thirdly, the darkness, when combined with prayer, isn't a darkness of evil, but rather an image of faith. Faith is never absurd, as Luther claimed. It always makes sense. It always makes sense. But sometimes the clarity of faith is beyond us. It was beyond the Blessed Virgin. The angel came to her and said, "You're going to conceive God in your womb." And she just said, "Okay. Behold the handmaid of the Lord. Be done unto me according to your word." I have no idea what that means, but I'll find out, and I trust. The darkness is an image of our faith. Walking in faith, even when our sight is imperfect. Coming to pray in that kind of a darkness. In the middle of things aren't clear, but I still offer myself to the Lord and trust him. I am glad to be here with you in prayer, in the dark,